タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are chatting with Jen Beeman. Jen is the pattern designer behind Grainline Studio, and she's here to chat with us about growing her business and her approach to work-life balance.
Hi, Jen. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So I thought we would start off for our listeners who might not know who you are. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, my name is Jen Beeman, and I run a pattern company called Grainline Studio based in Chicago.
And you live in Chicago with some lovely animals, right?
Yeah, they're trying to sabotage this podcast, my cat and my dog.
We're animal lovers. It's cool. I mean, we've met in person, so we know you a little bit. You're like not super big on chatting about yourself.
It's not one of my strong points.
It's okay. We're getting you out of your comfort zone today. We love it.
Cool. Yeah, we're really excited to talk to you. So we will wring all of the information out of you.
Cool. Yeah, I always tell everybody because I went to school for pattern making. So like when you're a pattern maker, you're like totally cool working in the basement and nobody knows that you exist. And then all of a sudden you're like, I have to talk about myself. Ah. So.
Yeah.
And especially, like, I mean, your Grainline Studio, I feel like everybody knows who you are in the community. Everyone's made, like, an Archer. You know, like, you're one of the first and one of the biggest. So, like, how does it feel, Jen?
It doesn't feel like that. It still feels like I'm just, like, a weirdo making patterns or whatever. Yeah.
Aren't we all just weirdos, like, making it work?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I want to talk about camp because I got to meet you for the first time at Camp Workroom Social. Camp was wonderful and I really enjoyed meeting you. So what was your take on camp? Did you enjoy it this year?
I did enjoy it. It was a little stressful because one of the teachers couldn't get in the country and I had to help teach a class when I thought I was assisting. So there was like a little extra pressure because I'm like a serial over-preparer. So it was stressful, but it was also really fun.
Yeah, you really stepped up. I think everyone at camp really appreciated all the hard work that you and Aaron put into that class. So thank you.
Yeah, we tried.
Yeah, you guys did a really great job with that class. We talked to some of the campers that took it and everyone was just like super thrilled with it. So really stepped it up, Jen.
We try.
So what was your favorite moment aside from like the class teaching? Like there's so many other activities involved in Camp Workroom Social. So did you have like a favorite moment this year?
I mean, I always love the raptors like a little too much.
Yeah, we might have noticed that.
Yeah, it's legendary now. But yeah, I just like being able to hang out with people who do the same thing as you. Like, aside from my assistant, I don't talk to like sewing people every day really, like in person. So that's really fun, just having that experience.
Yeah, it is such a unique experience, like being surrounded by like-minded people and so many of them too.
Yeah.
It's not just like a little meetup. You're like, oh, wow, I'm surrounded by 100 other people who sew, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, you mentioned the raptors, and I think our listeners probably have no idea what that is. So can you give us like a little rundown of what the Raptor Center is and also why you love it so much?
Okay, let me tell you about the raptors. Okay, so raptors, not dinosaurs, like raptors as in like hawks and owls and that kind of stuff. Eagles. After they're rehabilitated and they can't be released in the wild, they go to live at the Raptor Center at camp. And I love a good bird. Oh my god. And you're so close to them and they're so beautiful. And yeah, it's just, I'm not even formulating the right words because I love them so much.
You guys can go on either mine or Jen's Instagram if you want to see pictures.
Oh yeah, they're on there.
And then after camp, you didn't come home. You went on another little trip, right?
Yes. So I went to meet some friends in Philadelphia. And then from there, we drove to Rhinebeck Sheep and Wool Festival because just you know, I couldn't get away from crowds. I had to have more.
You're clearly a crowd lover.
So much. I love a crowd. No. I was like, it'll be so great. I'm a sewer. Nobody will know who I am. I'll just be like totally anonymous. But that's not how it went. Which was really cool.
No, I mean, you're also a very prolific knitter, so I can imagine a lot of people at Rhinebeck knew you from your knitting practice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, also, there's a lot more crossover than I think I realized, which is really cool. I didn't realize how many knitters sew, although I do kind of know how many sewers knit because I'm from the sewing, not from the knitting. But So I thought that was really awesome, actually, just like meeting a ton of people there who do both. It was really fun.
So what happens at Rhinebeck? Like, what is this festival? I've never heard of it before.
So it's like any other, like, fair for sheep and yarn. So, like, they're all over. Like, there's local, like, sheep and wool fests, like, all over the country. But for some reason, this one has become, like, the biggest one. Probably, like, proximity to New York City and the East Coast. There's just a lot of people there. But so you just go and there's like barns full of yarn and stuff. And like there was a live animal auction. So it's like happening there.
Whoa. Did you buy a sheep?
I wanted to, but I don't think John would be too happy with like a sheep living in the backyard. But it was so overwhelming. There were just so many people and I went like crowd blind like 15 minutes in. So I can't tell you like who was like what vendors were there or any of sheep names. I don't know. But it was pretty cool.
Did you get to buy yarn while you were there and like knit with people and stuff? Is that like the whole point?
Yeah. Yeah. So you just like walk around, pet sheep, watch sheep in sheep shows and goats and alpacas and stuff. There was like a little sheep photo booth where sheep were getting their photos taken. So it's like sheep are really the celebrities at this fest is my takeaway. But also everyone knits like a Rhinebeck sweater, but it was like 75 degrees in full sun. So
Oh my god,
I don't think a lot of people got to wear them. So I didn't get to like truly experience the Rhinebeck sweater in the same way. But
so they knit an entire sweater in like a weekend?
No, like you knit it beforehand. Like your Rhinebeck sweater, so it's going to be cool and you're going to wear it there and like show off.
Not knitters, so we're
is
like,
it like a specific is it a specific pattern?
No, it's just like whatever you want.
Oh, okay, so it's like my sweater for Rhinebeck.
Yeah. You'll see like what the most popular pattern at the time is, kind of.
So what was it this year?
I don't know, because I kind of went crowd blind, but my friend Tasha knit this sweater that was Nancy Drew. It was a book cover on the front, book cover on the back, and I think she was like the most famous sweater at Rhinebeck.
That sounds amazing.
She was basically like had no voice the second day from like explaining her sweater to people.
Oh, she needed to like have cards to hand out as she walked.
Yeah, she really did. So, but her sweater's awesome. And like, I think it's on pretty much every Rhinebeck roundup I've seen. So,
okay, we'll have to find a picture of that for the show notes.
Yeah, she's by Gum by Golly. So,
oh yeah, we know her. Yeah. She's a sewer too.
Yeah, she lives the next neighborhood over from me, but she's amazing. Oh. She's an amazing knitter and human. So,
there must be quite a few sewists in the Chicago area. Do you have like a large sewing scene there?
It's not, at least I don't know, it's not that big. Like my knitting group, they're all sewers too, so I hang out with them and we talk about sewing and knitting. But the Chicagoland area is so huge that even if somebody lives like in the next suburb, it could take like an hour to get to them. It's hard to meet up with people. I don't know how many people are in Chicago, but it's like the third largest city in America.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. It's a lot. So it can be hard to meet up with people, I've found.
And are you from Chicago originally?
Yeah, I'm from the suburbs.
Oh, cool. So you've lived there your whole life?
Pretty much, except I went to college in middle Illinois. So yeah, just Illinois for me.
And when you went to college, did you study fashion design?
Not originally. I went to the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, or Urbana-Champaign, pardon me. And I studied photography. And by the time I was halfway through my senior year, I knew I didn't want to do photography. I wanted to do fashion. But at that point, you just finish up your degree.
Yeah. I'm sure the photography has come in handy in your business. Yeah.
Definitely has. I call it my Instagram degree. So I think it's helping.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the timing of this. So you went to school, you got a degree in photography.
Yeah.
And then did you go to fashion school after that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. And where did you go to fashion school?
I went to Columbia College in Chicago.
Okay. And then you started working in the industry, right?
Yeah. I was a pattern maker in Chicago.
What's it like working as a professional pattern maker?
You know, someone gives you a sketch and you make a pattern for it. It's pretty solitary.
Yeah. And do you find that it's like a creatively stimulating process, or is it more sort of like going through the motions?
It's definitely not going through the motions, because you have to like engineer each piece. So it's creative in like an engineering-ish type way, but not creative in a I'm designing the garment that I'm making type way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And you transitioned from that into having your own line. So did you want to have more of that design control over things?
Yeah, so I started my blog because I just felt like I wanted to pattern the things that I wanted to pattern. And then people started asking me for the patterns. So that's kind of how I transitioned into that.
How exactly did that happen? People were asking you for the patterns that you were making for yourself. And then one day you were just like, I'm just going to start selling these. Like, it sort of happened organically, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was. So at the time, there weren't that many companies. It was like Colette, Sewaholic, and Berta Style was like a really big thing. And they were starting to do downloads. So I thought, I can do that. Like, I know how to use the Adobe Suite and I know how to draft patterns. So I just like had my patterns scanned and put them in and drafted everything by hand and did it that way. And my first pattern was for sale for $2.50.
What year was your first pattern? What year did your first pattern come
out? It was, I think, 2011. And I had no idea like what you could charge, because there weren't really that many downloads, and everything on Berta Style was free at that point. They hadn't started charging yet. So I was like, I don't know what the market is for this.
And then I'm sure you soon realized that there was definitely a market for
it. Oh, yeah. Huh? Yeah. That went up real fast.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay, so then, so you released the Tiny Pocket Tank. You were selling it for $2.50.
Yeah, people went crazy.
People went crazy for it. What was the next pattern that you released?
The Scout Tee, which is still one of our most popular ones.
Yeah, that's such a classic.
Yeah. And you were working from home at this time, right?
Yeah, I had like a tiny 70 square foot room that I worked from.
Were you like side hustling the pattern business? Like, you were still working?
Yeah, I didn't quit my job until 2014.
So you had quite a few years there where you were sort of just hustling it out on the evenings and weekends, eh?
Yeah, because when you go to private school, you have a lot of student loans. You've got to hustle that stuff.
And was it challenging, like, making the time to do the patterns? Were you having to, you know, really focus and force yourself to get things done, or were you sort of just doing it whenever, you know, the mood struck you?
Well, so I was doing patterns freelance, so there were times that were more busy and times that were less busy, so I would just kind of like batch do stuff or blog posts or whatever when I wasn't so busy at work. And then like the summer was always slammed for me, so I would just work as many hours as I could during the summer. But yeah, it was a weird balance for sure. But I had just gotten out of school, where I went to school full time and worked full time. So I was like, this is amazing. So yeah, it's all about perspective.
Yeah, totally. True. A little bit more of you controlling your own schedule will make a big difference. Hey?
Exactly.
So tell me like a bit about the evolution of Grainline. So you finally quit your job in 2014. I know like over the years you have an office and you've hired employees. So tell us a little bit about how all of that came about.
So yeah, I quit my job and then I started doing Grainline full time, and that was all out of my apartment. And we didn't have printed patterns at this point. I think it was 2014, maybe it was 2013, whatever. It was somewhere in there. So basically my living room had a giant pattern table, and I had like a den office that was just full of sewing machines and a kitchen table, and that was like my only furniture. So I just worked all the time. That was an intense part of my life.
I can imagine.
And then I met my husband sometime in there, and he's a graphic designer who works in print. So I had been trying to like get printed patterns going for a while, and early on, maybe it was like our second date, I wasn't ready. So he came up and he was like, what are all these papers on the ground? I was like, oh, dude, I'm trying to do printed patterns, but it's so hard. Like, I keep calling these printers and nobody calls me back. And he was like, oh, that's my job. We can have these in 6 months, easy. And then 6 months later, I had my first printed pattern.
Wow. And you were like, will you marry me?
No, let's do this. Yeah, he's a real keeper. Yes. But then once we got printed patterns, we had to get a studio outside of my apartment because I couldn't store the quantity that we had to order inside my apartment.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Like, what was that leap like for you going from working from home to getting an office? Like, it must have been a bit daunting to all of a sudden, like, have to have this separate space that you're in, like, in charge of and setting it all up.
Yeah, so it was terrifying, but at the same time that I moved that out, John moved in, so he was covering half the rent. So then I had freed up money to rent the studio. So that worked out really well. But yeah, it was terrifying. And I probably wouldn't have gotten a space if it hadn't been for him just saying, you need to like do this for your business. He's a lot better at like just doing things than I am. I'll like agonize over it and think about it forever. And he'll be like, this is just what you need to do. Just go do it.
Yeah.
He's usually right.
My partner did the same thing for me. I'll like agonize over a decision and he'll just be like, you should just do this. And I'm like, God dang it.
Yeah, right? It's like looking at it from the outside, it's like they're not as attached to it, so I think it's easier for them to see like, oh, this is what will make you and your business happy or like perform better, whereas yeah, I'm totally. Like, oh god.
Okay, so you have moved studios a few times over the years, and I know this because I mean,
we creep you
we
online,
love you. Yeah. we follow cool. you closely. But so how has it been, like, it seems like you're liking the space that you're in now, and you've kind of been in a few different spaces. So what was it like to, like, find the right space? Why did you decide to move? And, like, how did you kind of figure out how to find your place and find an office that works for your business?
So we were on the west side of Chicago in an area called Garfield Park, and it's a little dangerous over there. I just couldn't ask employees to come there. So we had been looking for a way to get out of that area. It's just hard. Chicago's really expensive. And John and I then bought a house in Portage Park, which is on the northwest side. So we started looking for places up here. So that's two reasons why we moved. It just happened to happen at the same time.
And now you're in a space that has like a storefront, right?
Yes. It is not open to the public. I'm really sorry, guys. But we get a lot of emails like, you have a storefront now. Can I stop by? I'm like, well, it's still just a workspace. It's just that up in the area I'm at, it was never industrial. So that's the only kind of like workspace you can really get here.
Yeah. So do people like walk by and peer in your windows?
When we were new, yeah, people would just like come in if we forgot to lock the door or be knocking. So John got a little decal made that says Green Line Studio, by appointment only. Nice. So it's been good after that. But yeah, we're not set up for anyone to stop by.
Yeah, that's understandable. I don't think many pattern companies are set up for people to just like come by the studio.
Yeah,
oh my
totally.
God, my apartment is like a tornado has passed through it every day when I'm working. So.
Yeah, the rare occasion that someone does randomly, like a friend or something, I'm like, well, this is it. Here's the tour. And then, like, there's nothing really to see there. It's just like sewing machines and a big table. It's pretty boring.
What's it like for your friends and family with you running this business? Do people kind of get what you're doing, or is it sometimes hard to describe it?
For family, they pretty much get it. My family's been super supportive the whole time, which props to them, because for a while it looked like, God knows what Jen's gonna do. You know, because like, who gets two BFAs, you know? Only a crazy person. So they've been really supportive, and they understand that I need to work during the week and I can't just take off whenever I want. And my close friends too, they totally understand. But a lot of people that you're telling what you do, they don't understand at all. So you'll say, I'm a pattern maker, and then they'll think you're like a surface designer, like a graphic designer. Mm-hmm. And then you have to say, well, no, like I make the pieces that get cut out to be sewn into your clothes. And they'll say, oh, I didn't know people did that. And it's like, well, yeah, like somebody designs your clothes. And then it goes a step further into, yeah, somebody's sewing your clothes. That's not machines. Like, that's not a fully automated process. So it's like really eye-opening to like realize what people know about the garment industry once you start talking about being a pattern maker.
Yeah, I always find it shocking considering literally everyone is wearing clothing and nobody understands how it works.
Nobody. It's so interesting. John is good at it. He'll say, she makes sewing patterns like those tissues your like grandma used to use or something like that. And everybody's like, oh yeah. But for some reason I'm like, oh, I'm a pattern maker.
Sometimes I just say designer and just let them interpret that however they want.
That's smart. That's what I should be doing.
So your husband works with you now, right?
Yes, full time.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And you have another employee, Lexi?
Lexi.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about like the work structure. Like, what do you do for your business? What does your husband do? What does Lexi do? And how does it all come together to make Grainline Studio work?
Okay, so I do the design and the pattern making and like office junk, and I blog. Lexi is like my production assistant, so she tests things, helps write instructions. She's the fashion design tutor at Columbia, so she, when she's not with me, she's just explaining how to do things to people who've never done sewing things before, so it's really helpful. John is our accounts manager, so he handles like ordering customer service, sends out all the orders, does the wholesale, the distro, and he also does all of our graphic design.
And do you have any subcontractors or anything that you hire? Yeah, outsource?
Yeah, we have quite a few. We have like proofreaders, editor. I'm having our patterns graded by a woman in town right now. I'm sure they're, like my accountant, my bookkeeper, all that kind of stuff. And we have our print brokers.
Okay, I would love to know what it's like working with your husband.
So everybody asks that, and like, I don't have any like good stories or anything. He just like, he has a little office in the back where he packs orders and listens to sports radio all day on his headphones. He also does all of our errands, so like makes sure we have lunch and stuff. So it's great because I don't have to like ship anything. He makes sure I have lunch, and then he drives me home. It's great.
Oh my God, that's so ideal.
You're really selling it.
It's pretty great, I'm not gonna lie. Like, we're not interacting with each other constantly all day, so it's basically the same as if we were just in our house all day together. You know, you're not in the same room with someone all the time.
Yeah, and does he help with like the long-term sort of vision for Grainline, or is that all you?
I would say it's mostly me, just because he doesn't like know the pattern crafting world that much. He's not like interacting with that part of the business ever. He's just like talking to the distributors and filling orders and stuff like that. I mean, I talk everything over with him, so like in a sense he does, but he's not like, I've got ideas for our next pattern, you know, that kind of stuff.
That would be amazing.
I know, right?
You'd have to be like, I'll take this into consideration.
Although one time, this is the cutest story ever. He was like in Berlin because he's also a techno musician. And so he texted me and he was like, I just saw the best jacket. You should make this jacket for Grainline. And I was like, okay, what did it look like? And he was like, well, it was kind of like a poncho. And I was like, oh my God, he knows the word poncho. And then I was like, okay, so like this. And I sent him a photo. And he was like, oh, no, I guess it's not a poncho. It's like a jacket, but like a cape, but also like a jacket. And like it was like thick and it had a collar. And I was like, this is, we're getting nowhere. So yeah, he does not help design.
I've had very similar experiences with Sam when he tries to describe things that he wants me to make for him. He's like, I want like a pair of hammer pants that are made out of like canvas material.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, hey.
I like send him some pictures. He's like, no, not like that. Like, it's just, it's impossible.
Yeah. I mean, one thing John does help with is, since he's a graphic designer, he has like a really intense sense of proportion. So I'll often ask him, like, what do you think about the proportions on this? And he always usually has a good answer. But he does not. No. The Grainline poncho with a collar, that's really a jacket with a cape, will be out next year.
Oh, perfect. Your next pattern?
Get ready.
The John poncho.
Exactly.
So you work with your husband. What is like the work-life balance like? Is it hard to sort of separate your day job with your personal life when you guys are both working on the business together?
Before I met John, I was in a long relationship that had a very unhealthy work-life balance. We were in the same place, but we were constantly working all the time. And that didn't work out for many reasons, but that was one of the contributing factors. So I think when I met John, I was just trying to be really conscious that like, I need to not take work home with me or this isn't going to work. And I really want this to work. And it's hard sometimes because I have a lot to do, but I've kind of come to terms with the fact that like, I know what I can do in a year. I know what we need to do in a year to stay afloat. And I'm not going to be the pattern designer with the most patterns all the time, or like releasing a million things, classes and all that stuff, because it's just like Grainline's important to me, but John's more important to me. So, and before I met John, I was working nonstop to like get the business to where we are today. So I feel like I've put in that time. I'm okay with, you know, just releasing what we're going to release and enjoying the rest of my life.
That's such a good attitude to have. And I think it's interesting to hear pattern designers talk about it, because some pattern designers do release a lot or release entire collections, and others are more, you know, two or three patterns a year. And it seems that you can be successful in both of those avenues depending on how you structure things. So yeah. I don't think there's like a right or wrong way to go about it.
No, totally. Totally. And I think it's hard, you know, everybody talks about like social media and this and that. It's hard when you see people releasing things all the time, but you just have to remember that's not me. That's not how I operate. That's them. That's their thing. Yeah. And it gets easier to remember that.
I personally really like when there's time to like let a pattern sink in. And you do such a great job of doing these really thorough sew-alongs for your pattern, which I always appreciate. And I'm sure that your other followers do too. Just having these beautiful photographed step-by-step tutorials is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a trend of like paying for that information, but I think it's important. Like, patterns aren't, in the grand scheme of things, that expensive, but if you're paying like $18 for a pattern, I want you to be able to like really make something you like and have it turn out. And I don't know, it's just important to us.
And in terms of the style of your patterns, you have a pretty clear style with your lines, like really beautiful and simple put together. So do you have like a philosophy for design, or do you have like a kind of clear vision for what you want to design for your line?
I feel like it just kind of come up with ideas for what I want to wear. I try to always have like good proportions. I'm very into proportions. Yeah, I just try to think about like what would I want to wear, like what would be comfortable day to day. I want to make sure everybody can wear our stuff day to day. It's not just like, you know, a fancy dress you wear one time a year, because I don't wear that kind of stuff.
I think you do that so well. Like, you really do design super wearable everyday garments. It's all really, really well thought out basics. Mm-hmm. And it is clear that that's your style as well, because you just wear your patterns all the time. And you represent your line so well. Huh. So I think like if that's what you set out to do, girl, you're doing it really well.
Thanks. That's what I'm trying to do. And yeah, like when we're designing, before we decide to do a pattern, we try to figure out like what will the variation posts be? Because we always want to be able to give people the option to do something more than just follow the pattern. And I don't know, I think that's really important to me.
Yeah, I would love to know. Okay, this is a two-parter.
Oh boy, okay.
Do you have a favorite pattern in your line? And what is the best-selling pattern in your line?
I think the best-selling pattern is the Scout. It's great for classes, so it sells a lot. And also you can use like your weird print fabrics. Not weird, but you know.
Novelty, we
novelty.
Like to
say. Yeah. I mean, I have some weird ones too, so whatever. But my favorite pattern is the Archer, because it's what I wear the most. And I like to say it was the best thing that ever happened in my closet, because I wear them all the time. So that pattern was like just for me. Luckily, other people liked it too.
Yeah, it's such a good classic button-up shirt, and it's a bit on the boxier side, so you can kind of like, my favorite thing to do is to lengthen it up to a little bit of a tunic length, and then wear it over leggings and boots. It's so cute.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted like a flannel shirt style. When I designed it, because I obviously, as we all know, if you have ever seen a photo of me, I don't wear fitted clothes.
You're always wearing these sort of drapey, boxy things, and you're like giving the camera a little bit of like a stink eye sometimes.
I feel like, let me address that real quick.
You do.
So I'm like in there by myself taking photos with a tripod and a timer. And so like, it's not fun or funny or like smiley when you're just like, oh God, I missed the timer again, you know? if you're like running to get in the photo, or like, you know, your remote's not working. So that's why I'm usually like nothing face in those. And then there's a few where I've recruited people to help me, and I'm usually smiling because I'm interacting with someone. And those ones, people are like, oh my God, you smiled. I'm like, yeah, but like when you're taking photos of yourself against a white wall and your technology is not always cooperating, like, are you having a good time?
No, I totally, I mean, yeah. 100%, I agree with you. I just think it's hilarious that like you're not pretending to smile or something. Yeah. Like,
it's,
I think,
so weird. Like, if you see the ones weird where I'm pretending to smile, you're like, oh God, she's pretending to smile.
You're like just not trying to fool anyone. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all real at Grainline.
No, I love that about you. I think that you come off as like a very honest, real person, and that comes across in a lot of different ways in your business and your personality and interacting with you. So it's something that I love about you.
Okay, cool. I'm like, oh God, this could be scary.
Great.
Okay.
Okay, so you have a new pattern coming out soon, right?
Yes.
Can you give our listeners any kind of like a little tease on what it's gonna be? Yeah. If they don't follow you, I mean, if they follow you, they might already,
if you follow me, especially my personal Instagram, you probably already know what it is. But it may or may not be a coat.
Ooh.
How's that for a spoiler?
So you already have the Cascade Duffel coat, which is very popular. So is this coat like a total departure from that? Completely different?
Yeah, it's totally different. It's like, oh, it's more like sleek city-ish, I would say. I may or may not have worn it to my wedding.
Oh,
yeah, that one.
These are some good spoilers. Thank you. Okay, well, I also wanted to ask you about naming your patterns.
Oh, good God.
Okay, so do you have some kind of like a system or strategy?
It seemed like you were doing trees for a little bit, or
yeah, because I'm terrible at naming no alder, linden, tamarack, all trees.
Oh yeah,
cool. I'm obviously not good at naming things, which is why there's three trees.
Obviously disagree strongly on that point.
Okay. Yeah, you have great names for your patterns, but we don't see the like process. Other iterations or like,
well, we stopped doing the tree because my employee, who has now left me for grad school, Sarah, she's good at naming things, so she came up with like good names. We have a list that we keep, like names that didn't fly for other ones that we liked, so usually we just add to that more or pick one.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Every time I hear a like name or a word that I like, I put it on the list, because you never know, and it might, you know, just fit something perfectly.
Exactly.
You have been through the pattern release process many times now. You have probably about like 12 to 15 patterns in your line.
Yeah, that's about right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, like, is it ever shocking or surprising to you which patterns do really well and which patterns maybe don't do so well? Or are you ever sort of caught off guard by the reaction from the community?
Yeah, sometimes I am. Like the tamarack, I didn't think was going to be as big as it is, but that one's been like a real kind of a crossover into the quilting market for us.
Oh, yeah.
Which my mom did see that coming, so props to my mom. So that one definitely surprised me. And also,
it seems to be having a real moment right now. It's yeah, like fall 2017 is the season of the tamarack jacket.
Well, the funny thing about our patterns is they sell really well when they first come out. But then, like the next year, they're like brand new again, which I don't totally understand, but I like it. So I think like every pattern that we've had, it's like people who are Grainline people will buy it right away or whatever. And then there's people who are like, oh, I could never wear a silhouette like that. And then the next year they're like, well, I thought I couldn't, but now I am.
I love your tamarack jacket. I made one last year, or actually I completed it in the spring, which was like really weird timing. So I didn't get to wear it until actually Camp Workroom Social. And
yeah,
I like wore it all weekend and it was like the perfect weight. And I mean, I would never think that a silhouette like that would work on me, but like, I just love it. I don't even care if it's not flattering. I think it looks great and it's super, super comfortable and I love it. And I want to tell you a story. I have a confession to make.
Yeah.
So we have sewing days She's laughing. We have sewing days. So we get together once in a while. Sometimes other people come along too. And when I was sewing the tamarack jacket, like, your instructions are so detailed. And like, and we started saying, what would Jen Beeman do? Yeah. Like, when we would have a problem, because you're so, like, you're such an expert to us. And so when we would like run into an issue with sewing where we'd be like, how do I deal with this? Or like, what do I do? We'd be like, what would Jen Beeman do?
I need a bracelet.
I know, and we were like, we should get bracelets made. So yeah, you come up a lot in conversation during your sewing days.
That's cool. I wish I was at your sewing days.
Yeah, well, you're always invited to the studio to come hang out.
Yeah,
I will definitely be taking you up on that.
Yeah. Okay, so you recently redid your website.
Oh God, yeah.
Okay, so that was a huge project. How did it go? Are you happy with the results? Yeah. Why did you decide to redesign? Tell us a little bit about that process.
So we decided to redesign because we had the blog on greenlinestudio.com, and then we had the shop on the subdomain shop.com, and I wanted it all on one domain. And also, so we had a WordPress blog and a Shopify shop. And I was so tired of paying so much to Shopify every month for a product that barely worked for us. So we hired somebody to build us a new site that John designed.
And it's beautiful.
Thanks. So it's WooCommerce, and that's all open source. So if two things are interfering with each other, then our developer can just go in and fix them.
Yeah, so. And I am also with WooCommerce and WordPress, and I love it for mm-hmm. that reason, because I have a little bit of a coding background myself, so I can often fix issues if yeah. there are any, or if not, there's like thousands of people who can help you
yeah.
For various price points, so it's just a lot easier.
And so now you're happy with the website the way it is, and you're happy with the update. Did the community have like a good reaction to your like branding change and all of that, or have you?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too much of a branding change. We still have like the same logo and all that. Like, my aesthetic is not super girly or anything, like actually very girly at all, so I kind of brought that more into the new one, so it's a little bolder.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, it wasn't like a huge departure, but you did make the switch to like more full screen wide graphics and stuff, which I always think looks so awesome, especially with your beautiful photos. So
yeah, John was very into that, so he did like the most of the layout and all that stuff, because that's yeah. his job.
Props to John.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. But since he's in publishing, he'll be like, oh, we really need to like talk about the line length on that, and I'm like, oh my god, what? Can we just be done? But I'm glad that he persevered. He was right.
Okay, I think we're going to stop grilling you about your business.
But before we do,
okay, what is your favorite part of your business, and what is your least favorite part of Grain Lines?
I think my favorite part is, number one, doing the patterns. I love doing that. And also interacting with people on the blog and social media and stuff. I think my least favorite part is probably like paying bills.
Oh yeah, I get that.
I don't like doing that, but it always kind of makes me feel like a boss when I'm doing it, because I'm like, yeah, I got this.
Yeah, that's true. I just like
until you don't got this, right?
Yeah. No. I'm like, I've got this, but can I just keep this money?
Yeah. Like definitely the least glamorous part about running a business.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
all of that accounting numbers part.
Yeah.
But I just want to be creative.
I know. And like, I do love like money stuff. Like, I love hoarding money like nobody's business, because I like to say it's because I'm Dutch. So that's why it's like extra painful for me to be like, oh God, government, here's your money. Ugh. But whatever.
So wait, tell us more about this hoarding money tendency. Are you like a minimalist? Do you not shop at all?
Oh, I mean, well, not too much. John definitely is the shopper of the two of us. I just love to hoard money and put it in the bank and in retirement accounts or whatever. And he'll be like, dude, we have no furniture. we have got to spend some money. And I'm like, yeah, but are we really in that room that much?
Yeah, he's like, because there's no furniture in there.
Exactly. He's like, well, maybe we would be if we didn't sit on the floor. But yeah, I got that from my mom, who got that from her parents. That's the Dutch side. But
not a bad habit to have, honestly.
Yeah, I love it. Although I do shell out for shoes a lot, which I probably need to rein in. But, you know, most of my clothes I make, so I don't pay for them. The business does. So
yeah, that's a good way to look at it. And then you just buy clogs to go with all your outfits. Okay, Jen.
Yes.
You have been in business for quite a while now. And it's honestly like so inspiring for people like Caroline and I to witness you having the success in this industry. And we're just wondering if you have any advice for creative entrepreneurs who are just starting out in this business.
So I would say, don't worry about what everyone else is doing. Just make sure you're doing the thing that you want to be doing. It's hard, like I mentioned previously, like with social media, you see what everyone's doing, everyone's releasing this and that. And I think a lot of people just starting out I've talked to have gotten really discouraged by that. And it's hard not to be. I get discouraged by it sometimes too. But it's mostly about just doing your thing, going in every day, doing your work, going home, going in the next day. You know what I mean? Like I'm probably less creative than a lot of people, but I work really hard. And I think that's important.
Have you had the sort of quintessential experience where you turned your passion into your day job and now you don't enjoy doing it anymore?
Yeah. I'm getting back to a place, like I scaled back a lot this year. It was a weird year in the US for many reasons. And I really had to just like scale back. I mean, we've only released one pattern so far this year. A lot of that was just me being so burnt out, honestly, pretty depressed. And I just needed to like re-enjoy sewing. And I think there was a point where I was trying to grow more than I thought I because I thought I should be growing, because if you're a business, you need to always be growing, you know, but you don't. Like, you just need to figure out what works for you. And I think I'm finally at that point where now I'm starting to sew for myself again and enjoying it. And I think it's really important to just like keep an eye on like your mental health. I'm like turning this into like a really serious PSA, but yeah, like it's hard. Running a business is hard and it takes a lot out of you. And it introduces a lot of weird self-doubt that you probably wouldn't have like just going to work every day. So it's really important to listen to your body and your brain and give it what you need.
You know, it's like funny that you're mentioning that, because I'm feeling that a lot too right now with my business as it grows. It takes a toll on you mentally, emotionally, physically in ways that you probably didn't really expect going into it. Or at least I didn't expect going into it. I sort of imagined like, oh, I'm going to own this business and it's going to grow and it's going to be amazing and I'm going to get an office. And like, it is amazing. But then there's also these like other kind of emotional things that come along with it. And I'm noticing that like my body is sending me signs I need to take breaks and I need to take care of myself. So hearing you talk about that is encouraging, like the fact that you've sort of found that balance in that place.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to, you know, figure that out. But yeah, if you don't listen to that, you're just going to end up not having your business anymore, I think. Or at least I would. Like there was a point when I was like, I just can't do this anymore. It was like, probably like January.
Yeah, a little bird actually told us. Actually, it was Kelly Ward. I'm just going to like throw it out there. A little bird named her Kelly under the Ward. Bus. Cool. She told us that this was your year of no. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think we've established in this podcast that I'm not like an outgoing people person. Like I can fake it pretty hard. And I'm not like faking it, but I am just like putting all my energy into it, and I can do that for a while, but it sucks it out of me. It makes me just feel like so depleted. And I had like a year of saying yes or whatever when I thought like my business needed to grow and I'll do all these things. So I was like teaching and doing a million patterns and like all kinds of random junk. And this year I was like, I'm not doing any of that stuff. I just need this to be like about myself. I need to like reconnect with my business. The website design like took it out of me. So that's why I was doing like the entire end of last year and the first half of this year, because it takes forever. And yeah, so I started saying no to everything, which felt amazing. And so now I'm done saying no to everything, but I'm just saying no to most things.
I think it's important to practice saying no, because a lot of the times we feel obligated to say yes to every request that comes across our plate, and it leaves you with no space to say yes to maybe the thing that you actually want to do when mm-hmm. it does happen across you, right? So
yeah,
you have to leave some wiggle room in your schedule and in your life for other opportunities.
Yeah, it's true. Very true.
So if 2017 was your year of no, what's 2018 hold for you?
I said yes to a few things already. So I'm saying no to everything else. Heads up, everyone. No, I'm kidding. I'm just going to see what it throws at me. But I have, like, I've already sort of planned out my year, which is nice. And I'm starting to work towards some of those goals already. So that feels good. Usually I'm like, oh, God, it's January 1st. I don't know what I'm doing this year.
I don't think you're alone on that one. Most people wake up January 1st being like, what is wrong with my life?
I know, right? Gotta go to the gym. No. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see what 2018 turns into. That's one thing I'm trying to, like, I'm sort of a perfectionist and I'm pretty strict on myself. And when I don't get things done that I had planned, I take it very hard. So I'm trying to just, like, be a little more chill with myself in 2018. Like, I'm the only one setting my own deadlines. So, like, you know, I can cut myself some slack if we're, like, a week late on something.
Yeah, it's amazing the amount of pressure I sometimes put on myself, especially with the pattern releases. And then I remember that nobody else knows it's happening.
Yeah.
And I can, like, let it slide for a week or two and it's going to be fine.
Exactly. Totally. Nobody knows.
Nobody sees, nobody knows.
Exactly.
So before we wrap up, we thought we would ask you a couple of questions about some topics that we covered in previous podcasts that listeners really loved. Mm-hmm. So we have two questions for you. First one is, do you have a large fabric stash, and how big is your fabric stash?
I have two different fabric stashes. I have my personal one, and then I have, like, the work one. So, like, a lot of fabric companies will send me fabric out of the blue. So that one's a little bigger than I'm, like, would normally be okay with. And it's like one IKEA cabinet.
I saw your fabric stash in, I think you posted a Facebook Live.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With someone from Bernina, and you showed, like, that wardrobe full of fabric, and it was just, like, so beautiful.
Yeah.
So many lovely pieces.
It's organized by fabric type. So, like, wools, cottons, denim chambray, regular knits, and then, like, thicker knits. So that way we can always find everything, because I love being organized. And then my personal stash, I wish you could see it. It's right next to me. It's like one small shelf, and most of it's already used, so it's just scraps.
And then you also mentioned that you're a perfectionist. So would you say that you're a sewing perfectionist?
One thing I always tell people in my classes is there's things you have to be a perfectionist about, and there's things you don't have to be. So, like, you have to learn all the rules so you know when you can cut corners. So if it's important, I am a super crazy perfectionist. If it's like, eh, then I'll do whatever. So, like, I always understitch and grade seams and all that stuff. But if, like, a side seam is, like, I did a sloppy job cutting and it's, like, a quarter inch off, then I'll either just hack the extra off or ease it in. So, like, it depends.
And do you find that your students struggle with perfectionism
yes.
when they're learning to sew?
Yeah. Yes, so much. Especially in a class like The Archer or something like that. I feel like one of the best things I can give them, like, to take away from the class is like, when I'm a perfectionist and when I'm not. Because then they feel like, okay, well, if Jen's doing whatever on this part, that's fine. But if she's really paying attention, then I should too. And that seems to be, like, a very popular tip to give people. Because it's, like, permission to, like, relax.
Yeah, so your tip is, what would Jen Beeman do?
Exactly. So we're back to that now. No.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you're teaching, you have an upcoming class, right? Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about
it? Yeah, so I'm teaching at the Bernina Creative Center at their headquarters in Aurora, which is just outside Chicago. And I'm teaching the driftless cardigan. So it's basically, like, how to use your serger to make a garment, like a whole intro. And I'm teaching with Jamie David, who is the education director or something for sergers. So she knows everything about Surgers. It's insane. So if you have any Surger questions, she's the one.
That must be a relief to have somebody in the class with you who can handle the Surger part of it while you're teaching.
Yeah, it's amazing. So like I taught at the Bernina University this summer, which was, it's just for dealers. But I taught with her and then the woman who has her job in Steckborn in Switzerland at the international headquarters. And it was like, all I had to do was focus on the construction. And they were just like, oh, you need to use blah, blah, blah needle. Oh, your tension is this. And I was like, how do you guys have this stuff memorized? But it was just like unbelievable watching them. So we're going to be making the driftless cardigan. And then we're also going to be teaching just like general sewing things you might need to know, like buttonholes. So it'd be pretty fun. I'm excited.
That's great. And if any of our listeners are interested in signing up for this class, where can they do that?
On the Bernina USA website. You have to go to like events, creative center or something like that.
Okay, well, we'll pop the link in the show notes. Got you, Jen.
Cool. So, Jen, where can people find you online?
So our website is greenlinestudio.com, and you can read our blog and shop our patterns there. We are at Greenline Studio on every social media for the business. And then I have like a personal Instagram where it's just like knitting and dogs.
Mm-hmm. And that's at Jen Beeman, right?
Oh, yeah. Jen_Beeman. If you're into that scene. It's like knitting dogs and clogs. So.
Oh my gosh. Well, Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show. It sounds like you have a little dog that wants some peanut butter. So we're going to let you get to that.
Oh, yeah.
No worries at all. It was such a pleasure chatting with you today. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Awesome. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. Caroline, if listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
You can find me on Instagram at Blackbird Fabrics or visit my shop, blackbirdfabrics.com.
And you can find me on Instagram at Helens_Closet and check out my blog at helenscloset.ca.
And we're recording today in blue skies, Vancouver, Canada. You can find show notes for this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
We would love to hear from you. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for us, leave us a voicemail. You can reach us at 1-844-SEW-WHAT. That's 1-844-739-9428. Or you can email us at hello@lovetosewpodcast.com.
Are you enjoying the show? Tell a friend. And if your friend doesn't know how to listen to podcasts, show them what they're missing. They will thank you.
And we will thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, God.
Aww,
don't
worry about it. Fine.
It's so sad. Let me in. If you guys want to hold on, I can give her more peanut butter. Lava! I'm trying to do a thing in here. Can you be chill, please? You know what? Can we pause this for a minute? I'm gonna have to give her more peanut butter because she's just she's a beagle.
No problem.
I can do like a PSA for not adopting a beagle at the end if you want. All right, I'll be right back.